Yudhisthira had come to Bhishma Dev. As Bhishma Dev was dying, Bhishma Dev had the benediction from his father because he had taken Brihadvrata that he would not marry and he would remain brahmachari although he was a kshatriya. So he had the benediction that he wouldn't have to leave this world, he wouldn't have to die unwillingly, and his death would follow his desire. So it was coming to the time when he was going to leave the world, and Krishna brought Yudhisthira to him at that time. Bhishma Dev, of course, was a great devotee of Krishna. What does it mean that he was a great devotee of Krishna? Go ahead. What does it mean? I can't hear you. Yeah. Yes. What does that mean? Service. Yeah. Yes. And that's actually the nature of transcendental affection for Krishna, that nothing in the material world can stop it or get in its way. There can be no material impediments. And here is a proof. Bhishma Dev was in the most uncomfortable position. He was shot through, his body was pierced by so many arrows. And did that stop his devotion from Krishna to Krishna? No, not at all. Can you imagine what it would be like to be pierced by tens and tens of arrows? What pain would be there? Imagine what we may be thinking at those times, cursing every person who has shot every arrow, cursing this one, angry at this one, crying, so lamenting, oh, I wanted to do this, why didn't I have time to do that? Only if I didn't go to the battlefield that day. But Bhishma Dev's mind was unflinching and undistracted from Krishna and his loving devotion to Krishna. And Maharaj Yudhisthira approached him, and immediately Bhishma Dev began speaking about how everything is the will of Krishna. So Yudhisthira should immediately take up his duties as king, except what has happened is not his responsibility, but as Krishna's undeniable will. Because again, not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's desire, at least sanction. So then Bhishma Dev explained who Krishna is, that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that Krishna had kindly appeared in Kurukshetra. He had come to Kurukshetra. How far is it from Hastinapur? Huh? 15 kilometers? 115. No, but the battle, they were in Kurukshetra actually already. It's true. Yes? Were they in Kurukshetra when they decided to go? Yes, they were in the middle military camps. No, but Kunti, was Kunti there? No. Krishna was back in Hastinapur and preparing to leave. And he said goodbye all to... So he was in Hastinapur. So Krishna traveled all the way to be present before Bhishma Dev. And Bhishma Dev was appreciating that so much, how Krishna so kindly had appeared before him, was standing before him at the moment he was going to leave this world. And then Yudhisthira ask Bhishma Dev some questions about governance, how to rule the kingdom, because he was going to take it up, and he was given some diplomatic skills by the instructions of Bhishma Dev. And then Bhishma Dev understood that the Uttarayana had appeared. The sun had traversed into the northern hemisphere, as it does on the 15th of January. So that's when it is. And then Bhishma Dev, who had been thinking so many things and been speaking about so many things, his life had been spent in fighting. Even though he was a devotee, his life had been spent in so many different ways. But now he withdrew his consciousness from everything and focused it simply upon Krishna. Why? Because it was the end of his life. It was the time he was going to depart from his body. Chajanyanti kalevram sadatad bhava bharata. And one wants to become especially careful to focus his consciousness upon where one wants to go, where one wants to take his next birth. One should focus his consciousness upon that when one is leaving the world, because there's one verse in the Bhagavad Gita that ends, Adishtaya manaschayam visya upasevate. The subtle body will carry the mind's desires with it, and that will determine one's next body. So Bhishma Dev, although he was always a devotee, wished to fix and focus his mind fully upon Krishna. So we'll start reading text 32. Bhishma Dev said, and we should again learn from Bhishma Dev's example, because we too will one day, each and every one of us, will be in this position where it is time for us to leave this world, depart from the body, and let the body decompose and crumble from the elements, into the elements from which it came. It will happen to all of us, each of us. No matter anything, no consideration, will happen to everyone. So very important instructions. If we get the opportunity nearing the end of the life, we should withdraw from all material things and simply focus our minds upon Krishna. Even though Bhishma Dev had so many services that were practically speaking organized by Krishna, but yet at the end of his life he focused his mind simply upon the Supreme Lord who stood before him. So he who had fought on thousands of battlefields and protected thousands of men stopped speaking, and being completely free from all bondage, he withdrew his mind from everything else and fixed his wide open eyes upon the original personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Yes. Let me now invest my thinking, feeling, and willing, which was so long engaged in different subjects and occupational duties, in the all-powerful Lord Sri Krishna. He is always self-satisfied. What does that mean? That Krishna is always self-satisfied. He is the supreme Atmaram. But what does it mean? He's full of all happiness and bliss and satisfaction. So that brings up the question immediately. Since everyone does things to fulfill their desires, and desires imply that there's something one lacks, because if one has something, he doesn't desire that thing because he already has it. So acting is based on desire, and desire is based on need, a lack. So what impels Krishna, who is fully self-satisfied, to act? It is not a desire, a material desire or a lack. It's not a desire based on a lack. But by his free will, he acts in relationship to his devotees. Because the devotees love him and he loves them. A perfect relationship. So he's always self-satisfied, but sometimes, being the leader of the devotees, he enjoys transcendental pleasure by descending on the material world, although from him only the material world is created. So he's going to say something about Krishna, who he's focusing his mind upon. He's reminding himself and everyone present, and ourselves as well, the position of Krishna. We'll read from Prabhupada's purport. Because Bhishma Dev was a statesman, the head of the Kuru dynasty, a great general and a leader of Kshatriyas, his mind was strewn over so many subjects, and his thinking, feeling, and willing were engaged in different matters. Now, in order to achieve pure devotional service, he wanted to invest all powers of thinking, feeling, and willing entirely in the Supreme Being, Lord Krishna. He is described herein as the leader of the devotees and all-powerful. Although Lord Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, he himself descends on earth to bestow upon his pure devotees the boon of devotional service. So why does he come? Here is one reason right here. He wants to bestow upon those who love him and desire to serve him. He wants to bestow upon them their desired pure service. He descends sometimes as Lord Krishna as he is, and sometimes as Lord Chaitanya. Both are leaders of the pure devotees. Pure devotees of the Lord have no desire other than the service of the Lord, and therefore they are called Satvata. The Lord is the chief amongst such Satvatas. Bhishmadev, therefore, had no other desires. Unless one is purified from all sorts of material desires, the Lord does not become one's leader. Interesting comment by Srila Prabhupada. We can't hear him, practically speaking, unless our consciousness is freed from material desires. It is not that he doesn't want to lead us, but we are unleadable. Just like if perhaps I'm speaking to someone and three other people are also speaking to him, even louder than my voice, then how can he even hear what to speak of? Do as I say. So our material desires are very loud voices within our consciousness. Very loud, commanding, and demanding voices. And therefore, we cannot hear Krishna. And these material desires are born of the lower two modes of material nature, passion and ignorance. So as long as passion and ignorance of filling our consciousness and providing desires, we are not able to hear Krishna's. We cannot hear the super soul. We cannot hear his instructions. We are not ready for the dami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te, because Krishna, after all, says, what's the beginning of that verse? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam, worshipping me. With what? Priti purvakam, with great bhajate priti, worshipping me with devotion, great devotion, affection. Then the dami buddhi yogam tam. Then he leads us, because it is our desire to be led. Pure devotees of the Lord have no desire other than the service of the Lord, and therefore they are called sattvatas. The Lord is the chief among sattvatas. Bhishma Dev therefore had no other desires. Unless one is purified from all sorts of material desires, the Lord does not become one's leader. Desires cannot be wiped out, but they have only to be purified. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita by the Lord himself that he gives his instructions from within the heart of a pure devotee who is constantly engaged in the service of the Lord. Such instruction is given not for any material purpose, but only for going home back to Godhead. So no more kshatriya thinking and work, no more statesmanship, no any other thoughts other than Krishna and his service and remembering Krishna. I was just reading something so wonderful because I was doing, I'm writing now about something that we'll be studying later on just at the end of the course about the Chatusloka Bhagavatam. The Bhagavatam spoken by whom? In four slokas. To Brahma, by Krishna. And the third verse is very, 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 it is called Rahasya. What does Rahasya mean? Secret, confidential, very mysterious, the meaning of it. Very, very mysterious. And Jiva Goswami has explained such nice things about this verse and how, giving the parallel of the gopis of Vrindavan, he was explaining how the gopis were so fixed in their thoughts of Krishna, but yet after he left, they were feeling terrible misery because of the lack of his presence. He wasn't there. So Krishna, he sent Uddhava with a message, and also he himself spoke to them in Kurukshetra and explained verses very similar to this verse in the third of the Chatusloki Bhagavatam verses. And he described how he is everywhere. But it wasn't super soul realization that he was describing. He was describing that if one purely thinks about him, one can actually get in touch with him and be in his association in his uppercut lila, in his unmanifested pastimes. Because there is no limitation to association with Krishna. There is no limitation whatsoever. But one has to be without material desires, be full of prema, desiring to lovingly serve Krishna. And then one could always, not one could always, one will always be associating with Krishna. Krishna actually will manifest in such a devotee's mind and heart, in their consciousness. He himself will be there. So Bhishma Dev, even with Krishna directly in front of him, or especially in one sense because Krishna was directly there, he just simply focused his mind upon Krishna. And he said, Sri Krishna is the intimate friend of Arjuna. He calls him Vijay Sakhi. Vijay is the name of Arjuna. He calls him Vijay Sakhi, the intimate associate and friend of Arjuna. He has appeared on this earth in his transcendental body, which resembles the bluish color of the tamal tree. His body attracts everyone in the three planetary systems, the upper, middle, and lower. May his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face, covered with paintings of sandalwood pulp, be the object of my attraction, and may I not desire fruit of results. Let me not, I pray that I will not desire to enjoy in this material world. I pray this, Bhishma Dev said. I don't want fruit of actions. I don't want to enjoy. Because of this desire to enjoy, separately, independently of Krishna, I am in the material world. I want to end that. I want to end my being in the material world and simply focus my consciousness with great devotion upon loving and serving Krishna. And interestingly enough, when the question again is asked, well, that Lord who has created the material world comes to the material world out of his independent desire. At the end of Prabhupada's purport to the last verse, it tells of that Lord who is so full of love that his desire is to be with his devotees. So Prabhupada says, the Lord also desires the association of pure devotees. This is at the end of 32. And for them only the Lord descends on the earth and enlivens them. The Lord appears out of his own will. He is not forced by the conditions of material nature. He is therefore described here in text 32 as Vibhu, or the Almighty, for he is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. He comes because he wants to save his devotees. He wants to associate with his devotees. He wants to display pastimes with his devotees, such as Arjuna, and therefore he's called Vijayasakhi, friend of Arjuna. So when Krishna comes, he comes in his Satchidananda, his all spiritual form that is so wonderful to behold. It is all attractive. He is all attractive. So Bhishma Dev is speaking about his glittering yellow dress and his lotus face covered with paintings in sandalwood, and his body is transcendental, resembling the bluish color of the tamal tree, blackish blue, vibrating at a different color. We'll read some of Prabhupada's purport from the beginning. When Sri Krishna, by his own internal potency, internal pleasure, appears on earth, he does so by the agency of his internal potency. The attractive features of his transcendental body are desired in all the three worlds, namely the upper, middle, and lower planetary systems. Nowhere in the universe is there such a beautiful body, are there such beautiful bodily features as those of Lord Krishna. Therefore, his transcendental body has nothing to do with anything materially created. Arjuna is described here as the conqueror, and Krishna is described as his intimate friend. Bhishma Dev, on his bed of arrows after the battle of Kurukshetra, is remembering the particular dress of Lord Krishna which he put on as the driver of Arjuna's chariot. So Bhishma Dev's mind is going to his own personal relationship with Krishna, where he experienced the most intimate moments in dealing with Krishna. This is completely natural. Whatever is intimate with us, whatever attracts us, our mind will tend to go there as we're dying. Our mind will tend to go there, whatever we're attracted to. We better pray that, let my mind be freed from material fruit of desires. Let my mind be attracted only to Krishna. Because if we happen to be very attached to our fish and our dog and our pet monkey, well, we may have lots of difficulties in our next life. But if our mind is simply focused upon Krishna, and there is no reason why our mind shouldn't be focused and attracted to Krishna, because he is all attractive with his glittering, effulgent, charismatic cloth of yellow and his beautiful complexion and face that is painted with sandalwood pulp. So Bhishma starts to remember Krishna as Vijay Sakhi, the friend of the conqueror Vijay, Arjun, the chariot driver of Arjuna. Prabhupada's purport continues. Well, fighting was going on between Arjuna and Bhishma. Bhishma's attraction was drawn by the glittering dress of Krishna. And indirectly, he admired his so-called enemy Arjuna for possessing the Lord as his friend. Arjuna was always a conqueror because the Lord was his friend. Bhishma Dev takes the opportunity to address the Lord as Bijay Sake, the friend of Arjuna, because the Lord is pleased when he's addressed conjointly with his devotees who are related with him in different transcendental humors. While Krishna was the charioteer of Arjuna, sun rays glittered on the dress of the Lord, and the beautiful hue created by the reflection of such rays was never forgotten by Bhishmadev. As a great fighter, he was relishing the relation of Krishna and the chivalrous Yuma. His relationship with Krishna, most amazingly, was to fight with Krishna. And yet, he was a devotee. Kamsa also wanted to fight with Krishna, but he was an asura. But Bhishma was fighting with Krishna as a devotee. Now listen to this, what Bhishma Dev says next. On the battlefield where Sri Krishna attended Arjuna out of friendship, he was driving his chariot, because this was Krishna's most intimate dealing with Bhishma Dev, and he was thinking of this. Krishna was standing in front of him, and his mind was completely focused on Krishna, especially on this past dealing with Krishna as Krishna was driving the chariot of Arjuna. The flowing hair of Lord Krishna turned ashen due to the dust raised by the hooves of the horses. This is what he's thinking. Krishna's hair, his beautiful blackish hair, was gray in color, the color of ash, due to the dust raised in the air by the horses during the battle. And because of his labor, Krishna was working, driving the chariot of Arjuna. Beads of sweat wetted his face. That picture of Krishna driving the chariot of Arjuna was impressed upon Bhishma Dev's mind. All these decorations, intensified by the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows, were enjoyed by him. Let my mind thus go on to Sri Krishna. Bhishma Dev, most amazingly, was shooting arrows at Krishna because they were fighting. And Bhishma Dev was a fighter. He was a warrior. And he was shooting arrows at Krishna. And those arrows were wounding Krishna's body. And Krishna was accepting those arrows and enjoying them in chivalry just because they were offered by his devotee, Bhishma Dev. And this was the mood of exchanging rasa. This is incredible. This lets us understand something about Krishna. Not only is he the protector of his devotee, not only will he accept the prayers of his devotees, not only does he accept a leaf of flower and fruit or water offered by his devotees, but anything, even arrows offered by his devotees, he accepts. Because, why? Just like when friends sometimes, when they're fighting, some boys when they're young, they're always fighting with their friends, wrestling, throwing each other on the ground. They have a specific mood, but it doesn't get in the way of their friendship. Rather, because it's friendship, they go over and punch one in the arm. How are you today? And punch him in the arm, and oh, what did you do that for? And then when he turns his back, boom! But if an enemy does that, then there's a real fight. So everything has to do with devotion. Everything in dealing with Krishna has to do with devotion. And then anything offered to Krishna with devotion, Krishna accepts it. Now we are learning about Krishna, and we're getting some of the keys for understanding the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. Let my mind thus go into Sri Krishna. Purport. The Lord is the absolute form of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. As such, transcendental loving service to the Lord in one of the five principal relations, namely Shanta, Dasya, Shakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurja, neutrality, servitorship, friendship, filial affection, and conjugal love, is graciously accepted by the Lord when offered to the Lord in genuine love and affection. Sri Bhishma Dev is a great devotee of the Lord in the relation of servitorship. Thus his throwing of sharp arrows at the transcendental body of the Lord is as good as the worship of another devotee who throws soft roses upon him. He was accepting the arrows that were piercing his body like the offering of roses, fragrant, soft, tender, rose petals. Because they were offered fully with devotion. This is Krishna. So therefore, asnami paratatmana, because bhakti paritam, they are the food, the leaf, the flower, the fruit, which Krishna is not in need of leaves and fruit and flowers any more than he's in need of arrows. But when the devotee offers these things, oh Krishna, please be pleased. I'm doing this for you with bhakti, Bhagavad Dharma. Krishna is made happy even if the offering is arrows. This is Krishna, and he reciprocates. And because Bhishma Dev was shooting arrows with devotion, and because Bhishma Dev was shooting arrows with devotion at Krishna, how could he reciprocate? By being wounded. He can't be wounded. He can't bleed. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this verse, talking about the wounds of Krishna in Bhagavat Sandarbha. He says, because the transcendental body of Lord Krishna can never be hurt or pierced by any weapon, it should be understood that the description of this pastime should be not taken as truth, that he can't be pierced, but as a specific illusion arranged by the Lord. So Bhishma Dev wants to shoot Krishna with devotion, and Krishna bleeds, becomes wounded, not his transcendental body, Satchidananda. But this is how Bhishma Dev is reciprocating with him, and Krishna is reciprocating with him. This is so wonderful. How Krishna is simply, he comes to the world to reciprocate with his devotees. He wants the association of his pure devotees in so many different rasas, and he comes to the world for that. Further down, Bhishma Dev appreciated the all-merciful attitude of the Lord because he did not leave Arjuna alone, although he was disturbed by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev. He was shooting Krishna, and Krishna would not pull the chariot away. He would not get off in any way. His business was to protect Arjuna because he was the chariot driver. Nor was he reluctant to come before Bhishma's deathbed. He didn't take it. Oh, I should come before you. You're dying, and you're the one who shot me with arrows. And now you want some mercy for me. Even though he was ill-treated by him on the battlefield, Bhishma Dev's repentance and the Lord's merciful attitude are both unique in this picture. Now, this was the first verse that when I took initiation from Srila Prabhupada by his mercy in Montreal in 1968, the next day I was asked to give Bhagavatam class. And this was the first that I was asked to lecture on, speak on. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a great acharya and devotee in the humor of conjugal love with the Lord, remarks very saliently in this regard. He says that the wounds created on the body of the Lord by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev were as pleasing to the Lord as the biting of a fiancé who bites the Lord's body, directed by a strong sense of sex desire. Such biting by the opposite sex is never taken as a sign of enmity, even if there is a wound on the body. Therefore, the fighting as an exchange of transcendental pleasure between the Lord and his pure devotee Sri Bhishma Dev was not at all mundane. So a very intimate example. Beside that, since the Lord's body and the Lord are identical, there was no possibility of wounds in the absolute body. The apparent wounds caused by the sharpened arrows are misleading to the common man. But one who has a little absolute knowledge can understand the transcendental exchange in the chivalrous relation. The Lord was perfectly happy with the wounds caused by the sharpened arrows of Bhishma Dev. The word vibhidyaman is significant because the Lord's skin is not different from his body, from the Lord. Because our skin is different from our soul, in our case, the word vibhidyamana, or being bruised and cut, would have been quite suitable. Transcendental bliss is of different varieties, and the variety of activities in the material world is but a perverted reflection of transcendental bliss. Because everything in the mundane world is qualitatively mundane, it is full of inebrieties, where in the absolute realm, because everything is of the same absolute nature, there are varieties of enjoyment without inebriety. There's no inconsistency. There's all that takes place in the spiritual world is different exchanges of rasa and loving devotion with Krishna. And that's all that it exists. There's no birth, death, old age, disease. There is no frustrations on the material level. There is Krishna organizing things through his internal potencies so that the exchange of bliss can go on eternally. The Lord enjoyed the wounds created by his great devotee Bhishma Dev, and because Bhishma Dev is a devotee in the chivalrous relation, he fixes up his mind on Krishna in that wounded condition. So this is what is inspiring to Bhishma Dev. He's remembering Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where Krishna, because he's such a warrior, there is warriorness coursing through his veins. He's a warrior, he's a Kshatriya. He was born as a warrior, he lived as a warrior, and now he's dying with his body being pierced by arrows achieved in battle. So this is what is inspiring to him. Bhishma Dev continues. In obedience to the command of his friend, Lord Sri Krishna entered the arena of the battlefield of Kurukshetra between the soldiers of Arjuna and Duryodhana. And while there, he shortened the lifespans of the opposing party by his merciful glance. This was done simply by his looking at the enemy. Let my mind be fixed upon that Krishna. So he is impartial, yet he shortened the lives of the opposing party. This is his mercy. And also it shows his partiality to his devotees. So here again, we're getting a glimpse of how Krishna deals with his devotees. Devotees, again, are those who have devotion for Krishna. A devotee is one who possesses devotion. The desire from hearing Bhagavatam sprouts in the heart. Bhakti upadyate pungsan. That by hearing the Bhagavatam, bhakti sprouts. The prayer, one of the prayers that we say, prema varshaksharayate. You rain pure love of God upon the reader, the hearers. Because we've tried in this life, in so many lives, to attain the happiness that the soul naturally desires, but every attempt has failed. Ultimately, death causes the failure of every pleasing relationship. Everything we've gained, we have to leave behind, and our body turns into ashes or buried in the ground. And here, we're hearing about Krishna's wonderful dealings with his devotees that are so special that if a devotee is offering arrows, or that story about Vidura's wife, when Krishna came to Vidura, when he refused the food, Duryodhana had cooked Krishna a big feast, but Krishna refused to eat it. Why? Because he's not a devotee. He was so proud. He wouldn't listen to Krishna. He wouldn't. There was no peace. So envious. He wouldn't accept this luxurious feast. So then Krishna went to the home of Vidura. And Vidura's wife was a devotee. And Krishna said, I'm hungry. He walked into the house. And there was nothing for them to eat. All there was some bananas. So she said, all there are some bananas. I want them. I'm hungry. So she was so ecstatic that Krishna had come. And in her ecstasy, she was feeding Krishna the peels of the bananas. And throwing away, she forgot, and throwing away the bananas. And Krishna, in his ecstasy and reciprocation with her love, was eating the peels. Because what does Krishna need with any food? He's self-satisfied. That was the first thing that we heard. But when someone is offering something with devotion, even if it is a leaf, fruit, flower, or water, an arrow or a peel, not that we should imitate in either of those cases by shooting arrows at Krishna or offering him banana peels, obviously. But the point is so striking how Krishna reciprocates with his devotee, the affection of his devotees. So we should try to become devotees. And if we are devotees, we should become better devotees. And if we are better devotees, then we should give our better devotion to others, being merciful to them. Arjuna had ordered the infallible Lord. He had ordered Sri Krishna, Sanayorubhyo Madhye, Ratam Stappaya Mechuta, bring my chariot. He's God. We should keep that in mind at this point. And he's ordering him, bring my chariot in front of the armies. Bhishma, Drona, Pramukhata. And he brought them right in front of the face of Bhishma and Drona. He at once did so when the Lord was asked, just like an order carrier. And the Lord pointed out all the important men on the opposing side, saying, here is Bhishma, here is Drona, and so on. The Lord, being the supreme living being, is never the order supplier or order carrier of anyone, whoever he may be. So how carefully Prabhupada has to explain all these points. Because he has to remember, he's writing in the English language, and it's probably going to be read by people who have no understanding at all who Krishna is, what Krishna does, how there is no culture. So he has to explain, Krishna does this. And of course we should not think that Krishna is an ordinary person because he has done that. Always he has to go back and explain the other side. How carefully. So he's nobody's order supplier or order carrier of anyone, whoever he may be. He's the Supreme Lord. He's Parameshwar. He's Purushottam. But out of his causeless mercy and affection for his pure devotees, sometimes he carries out the order of the devotees like an awaiting servant. Nanda Maharaj says, bring my shoes, my wooden shoes. And Krishna sweetly puts the wooden shoes upon his head. And he walks towards Nanda Maharaj. And Nanda Maharaj's heart melts in the ecstasy of the relationship with father and son. And Krishna has brought so much ecstasy to Nanda Maharaj by that simple act of carrying the shoes upon his head. And therefore Krishna, seeing how happy Nanda Maharaj is, then Krishna becomes so happy. And seeing how happy Krishna is, Nanda Maharaj becomes still more happy. This is life in Braja. So these desires, these desires, by that I mean the desire to actually be a devotee and live in Goloka Vrindavan, they should be planted in our hearts firmly, knowing that what other relationship is worthwhile, or rather relate to everything else through everyone else and everything else through this relationship. So he doesn't have to follow anyone's orders, but out of his causeless mercy and an affection for his pure devotees, sometimes he carries out the order of a devotee like an awaiting servant. By executing the order of a devotee, the Lord becomes pleased, as a father is pleased to carry out the order of his small child. This is possible only out of pure transcendental love between the Lord and his devotees. And Bhishma Dev was quite aware of this fact. He therefore addressed the Lord as the friend of Arjuna. So Bhishma Dev is continuing. Text 36. When Arjuna was seemingly polluted by ignorance upon observing the soldiers and commanders before him on the battlefield, the Lord eradicated his ignorance by delivering transcendental knowledge. May his lotus feet always remain the object of my attraction. Fulfilling my desire and sacrificing his own promise, he got down from the chariot, took up its wheel, and ran towards me hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. So this is a very specific pastime that is very famous and very important that took place during the Battle of Kurukshetra. How Bhishma had vowed to fight so intensely with Arjuna, who Krishna was going to protect. He knew that Krishna always protects his devotees. But yet Krishna had promised not to fight in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, to be impartial. But Bhishma said, I'm going to kill Arjuna. I'm going to fight so furiously that I'm going to kill Arjuna. And unless Krishna breaks his promise to not participate, he will not be able to save Arjuna. That was Bhishma's promise. Now, on this... In 37, there is the word chalagur, that Krishna, he got down from the chariot, He sacrificed his own promise to not to participate. He got down from the chariot. He took up the chariot wheel and ran towards me, Bhishma Dev said, hurriedly, just as a lion goes to kill an elephant. He even dropped his outer garment on the way. The word chalagda isn't exactly, I don't think it's in the translation, but it means as he ran, the earth was trembling, trampling the earth. He was running. And Srila Swami explains in his commentary that Krishna, while performing his human-like pastimes, allowed the weight of the entire universe to be in his body. Thus, as he walked the earth, it trembled. Srila Jiva Goswami comments on this also, that because Krishna was in such a great rush, his bodily steps moved the earth. Krishna was so heavy, the earth trembled as he rushed towards Bhishma. He was so hurrying to protect his devotee. Also, we'll hear in the third canto, when Krishna went to where Jayan Vijay were cursed by whom? Four Kumaras. And Krishna, it describes how Krishna went on his lotus feet, but Garuda was there. So the question comes, why did he walk there on his lotus feet while Garuda, who is so speedy, was present right there? And our acharyas have commented, because Krishna was so fearful that the four Kumaras would again curse the gatekeepers, his devotees, his servants, Jayan Vijay, in such a way that they would be finished completely. He did not even want to wait for Garuda. Therefore, he walked there so quickly by his own lotus feet. This is Krishna. So Krishna was trampling the earth, making it tremble as he rushed to protect Arjuna, even breaking his own promise, rushed towards Bhishma to stop him. Now, and Bhishma Dev is just appreciating this Krishna who has acted in these ways. Because again, he's a chivalrous warrior. May he, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead who awards salvation, be my ultimate destination. On the battlefield, he charged me as if angry because of the wounds dealt by my sharp arrows. His shield was scattered and his body was smeared with blood due to the wounds. Prabhupada's purport. The dealings of Lord Krishna and Bhishma Dev on the battlefield of Kurukshetra are interesting because the activities of Lord Sri Krishna appear to be partial to Arjuna and at enmity with Bhishma Dev. But factually, all this was especially meant to show special favor to Bhishma Dev, a great devotee of the Lord. The astounding feature of such dealings is that a devotee can please the Lord by playing the part of an enemy. Why? Because he's a devotee, and only devotees can please the Lord. Because everything a devotee does is done with devotion, even acting as if an enemy. The Lord, being absolute, can accept service from his pure devotee even in the garb of an enemy. The Supreme Lord cannot have any enemy, nor can a so-called enemy harm him because he is ajita or unconquerable. But still he takes pleasure when his pure devotee beats him like an enemy or rebukes him from a superior position, although no one can be superior to the Lord. These are some of the transcendental reciprocatory dealings of the devotee with the Lord. And those who have no information of pure devotional service cannot penetrate into the mystery of such dealings. Bhishma Dev played the part of a valiant warrior, and he purposely pierced the body of the Lord so that to the common eyes it appeared that the Lord was wounded. But factually, all this was to bewilder the non-devotees. The old spiritual body cannot be wounded, and a devotee cannot become the enemy of the Lord. Had it been so, Bhishma Dev would not have desired to have the very same Lord as the ultimate destination of his life. Of course he wasn't the Lord's enemy. You don't call your enemy before you when you're dying to focus your vision and heart upon him with great devotion. He never was the Lord's enemy. This was just exchange of rasa. Had Bhishma Dev been an enemy of the Lord, Lord Krishna could have annihilated him without even moving. There was no need to come before Bhishma Dev with blood and wounds. But he did so because the warrior devotee wanted to see the transcendental beauty of the Lord decorated with wounds created by a pure devotee. This is the way of exchanging transcendental rasa, or relations, between the Lord and the servitor. By such dealings, both the Lord and the devotee become glorified in their respective positions. The Lord becomes famous as the servant of his devotee, and the devotee becomes famous as a great devotee who enacted these wonderful pastimes with him. The Lord was so angry that Arjuna checked him when he was moving towards Bhishma Dev. Arjuna, if you've ever seen the pictures, holding on to Krishna to stop him. He was trying to protect Krishna's promise. No, no, you promised not to take part in the battle. But Krishna was so angry that someone was trying to hurt his devotee that in spite of Arjuna's checking, he proceeded towards Bhishma Dev as a lover goes to a lover without caring for hindrances. He's pulling Arjuna along. Apparently his determination was to kill Bhishma Dev, but factually it was to please him as a great devotee of the Lord. The Lord is undoubtedly the deliverer of all conditioned souls. The impersonalist desire salvation from him, and he always awards them according to their aspirations. But here Bhishma Dev aspires to see the Lord in his personal feature. All pure devotees aspire for this. So if Krishna doesn't have qualities like the impersonalists say, then he doesn't have the quality of bhaktivatsal. He doesn't have the quality of mercifulness or kindness or compassion or the quality to reciprocate with those who wish to merge with him. So that is a foolish philosophy. What to speak of a dry philosophy. And it is not sweet, pleasing to the heart as Krishna consciousness. Bhishma Dev continues. Now I have an excerpt where Prabhupada explains the background to this pastime. We'll see if we have time to read it. Now listen to this carefully. At the moment of death, let my ultimate attraction be to Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead. I concentrate my mind upon the chariot driver of Arjuna, who stood with a whip in his right hand and a bridle rope in his left, who was very careful to give protection to Arjuna's chariot by all means. Those who saw him on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attained their original forms after death. Now envision this. Krishna was driving Arjuna's chariot. He was holding the bridle rope, the reins. He had the whip to move the horses the way he wanted in his right hand. Arjuna was behind him. And Bhishma Dev was seeing the sweat on his face, Krishna's face, and his body pierced from the arrows. And Bhishma Dev, although he's appreciating Arjuna, calling him Arjuna Sakhe, or Vijay Sakhe, calling Krishna that. But Bhishma Dev is thinking himself more fortunate than Arjuna. Why? Everyone knows. Yes. Why? Just imagine it. He's behind. Yes. And therefore, He's behind Krishna. And therefore what? He can't see this incredibly beautiful scene. And he sees Krishna from behind. And Bhishma Dev, this is the perfection of he, the warrior's entire life, to see Krishna in this way. And Arjuna isn't able to see it. No one is able to see it. Only he can see it. Krishna has given him this vision for his eyes only. And it's the specifically that vision that's reciprocating with Bhishma Dev's specific mood of devotion towards him. Prabhupada says in his purport, so this is right in the middle, Bhishma Dev never forgot the beautiful feature of the Lord as Parthasarathi, which even Arjuna could not see. Arjuna was behind the beautiful Parthasarathi. What does Parthasarathi mean? Partha, chariot driver, the rat driver of Partha, the son of Prita, Arjuna. And Bhishma Dev was just in front of the Lord. As far as the military feature of the Lord is concerned, Bhishma Dev observed this with more relish than Arjuna. Now, after remembering Arjuna in this way, and Krishna in this way, because the proper way to remember Krishna is in relationship to his devotees. Now, for a brief moment, to evoke the mercy of the topmost devotees, Bhishma Dev is going to remember the residents of Vrindavan, the gopis. Let me my mind be fixed upon Lord Sri Krishna, whose motions and smiles of love attracted the damsels of Brajabhumi, the gopis. The damsels imitated the characteristic movements of the Lord after his disappearance from the rasa dance. So he remembers the gopis. Kunti Devi remembered in Vrindavan whom? And Bhishma Dev is remembering the gopis. Because just remembrance of remembering Krishna as devotees is purifying and it evokes the mercy of both Krishna and the devotees. Purport. By intense ecstasy and loving service, the damsels of Brajabhumi attained qualitative oneness with the Lord by dancing with him on an equal level, embracing him in nuptial love, smiling at him in joke, and looking at him with a loving attitude. The relationship of the Lord with Arjuna is undoubtedly praiseworthy for devotees like Bhishma Dev, but the relation of the gopis with the Lord is still more praiseworthy because of their still more purified loving service. By the grace of the Lord, Arjuna was fortunate enough to have the fraternal service of the Lord as chariot driver. But the Lord did not award Arjuna with equal strength. The gopis, however, practically became one with the Lord by attainment of equal footing with the Lord. Bhishma Dev's aspiration to remember the gopis is a prayer to have their mercy also at this last stage of his life. The Lord is satisfied more when his pure devotees are glorified, and therefore Bhishma Dev has not only glorified the acts of Arjuna, his immediate object of attraction, but has also remembered the gopis, who are endowed with unrivaled opportunities by rendering service to the Lord. The gopis' equality with the Lord should never be misunderstood to be like the Sayuja liberation of the impersonalists. The equality is one of perfect ecstasy, where the differential conceptions is completely eradicated for the interest of the lover and the beloved become identical. More pastimes he's remembering. At the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yajna sacrifice, performed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, there was the greatest assembly of all the elite men of the world, the royal and learned orders. And in that assembly, Lord Sri Krishna was worshipped by one and all as the most exalted personality of Godhead. And this happened during my presence, and I remembered the incidents in order to keep my mind upon the Lord. So, this is the instructions. This is the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to remember Krishna, because the remembrance of Krishna, the names of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, and the qualities of Krishna's devotees, and the pastimes of Krishna are the same as Krishna. Their association with Krishna. Therefore, the gopis, by constantly remembering Krishna, were constantly associating with Krishna's uppercut lila. And this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was taught. Therefore, kirtaniya sadahari, always chant, always associate with Krishna. And this, therefore, is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. He once told me that, because I was chanting all the time when I was sitting next to him. And he said, this is a very good habit. As if I was, it's not a, it was a recently acquired habit, I'll say that, just for Prabhupada's presence. But yes, this is what we are meant to do, to always chant, always focus our mind on Krishna. Because if our mind isn't focused on Krishna, what is it going to be focused on? Everyone knows for themselves what their minds focus on. But yes, we should put let the sun of the Bhagavatam rise in our hearts, Puranarko, Dunodita, and dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga by always keeping in the association of Krishna. That most worshipable Lord, everyone had agreed in the entire Rajasuya sacrifice, which was full of the greatest personalities at that time, they had all agreed that Krishna was the most worshipable person. And that most worshipable person was present before Bhishma Dev. And his final verse, final prayer. Now I can meditate with full concentration upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, now present before me, because I have transcended the misconceptions of duality in regard to his presence in everyone's heart, even in the hearts of the mental speculators. He is in everyone's heart. The sun may be perceived differently, but the sun is one. Srila Jiva Goswami, I think, will comment on this verse briefly. Yes, he comments that upon Krishna's all-pervasiveness in Bhakti Bhagavat Sandarbha, saying, Bhishma Dev continued, now, this is the meaning of this verse. He gives an anvayor, an explanation of this verse according to the words. Now I can meditate with full concentration, samadhi gatosmi, upon that one Lord, Sri Krishna, who is now present before me, tamimam, and whom I have described in my previous prayers. So that one, that Krishna who has done all those wonderful things is actually everywhere in everyone's heart. The Supreme Lord is also present in the hearts of all conditioned souls. Sarira bhajam riddhi riddhi. Although the Lord is generally all-pervading in his forearm, supersoul form, I now see him everywhere in his two-arm form of Sri Krishna, which is the supremely powerful form and which is now present before me. No other form is equal to the form of Sri Krishna. And now Sukta Goswami, who is speaking all these verses to the sages of Namasharanya, continues. Thus Bhishma Dev merged himself in the Supersoul, Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his mind, speech, sight, and actions. And thus he became silent and his breathing stopped. Knowing that Bhishma Dev had merged into the unlimited eternity of the Supreme Absolute, all present there became silent like birds at the end of the day. What he had done, all his material, the elements of the material body, he had disintegrated them basically by merging them into their source. Thereafter, both men and demigods sounded drums in honor, and the honest royal order commenced demonstrations of honor and respect, and from the sky fell showers of flowers. O descendant of Bhrigu, That's Shonaka Rishi. After performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishma Dev, Maharaj Yudhisthira was momentarily overtaken with grief because his great well-wisher, Bhishma Dev, who had cared for him ever since his childhood, had now left this world. All the great sages then glorified Lord Sri Krishna, who was present there by confidential Vedic hymns. Then all of them returned to their respectful hermitages, bearing always Lord Krishna within their hearts. Thereafter, Maharaj Yudhisthira at once went to his capital, Hastinapur, accompanied by Lord Sri Krishna, and there he consoled his uncle and aunt, Gandhari, who was an ascetic. After this, the great religious king, Maharaj Yudhisthira, executed the royal power in the kingdom strictly according to the codes and royal principles approved by his uncle and confirmed by Lord Sri Krishna. So that ends the 9th chapter of the first canto, entitled The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev in the Presence of Lord Krishna. I'd like to just read some of the purport to 48, which describes 46 purport. Bhishma Dev was not only a great family head of Maharaj Yudhisthira, but he was also a great philosopher and friend to him, his brothers and his mother. Since Maharaj Pandu, the father of the five brothers headed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, had died, Bhishma Dev was the most affectionate grandfather of the Pandavas and caretaker of the widow daughter-in-law Kunti Devi. Although Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the elder uncle of Maharaj Yudhisthira, was there to look after them, his affection was more on the side of his 100 sons, headed by Duryodhana. Ultimately, a colossal clique was fabricated to deprive the five fatherless brothers of the rightful claim of the kingdom of Hastinapur. There was great intrigue common in imperial palaces, and the five brothers were exiled to the wilderness. But Bhishma Dev was always a sincerely sympathetic, well-wisher, grandfather, friend, and philosopher to Maharaj Yudhisthira, even up to the last moment of his life. He died very happily by seeing Maharaj Yudhisthira to the throne. Otherwise, he would have long ago quitted his material body instead of suffering agony over the undue sufferings of the Pandavas. He was simply waiting for the opportune moment because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as his lordship Sri Krishna was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew that the Lord's devotee cannot be vanquished at any time. Maharaj Yudhisthira was quite aware of all these good wishes of Bhishma Dev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul and not for the material body which Bhishma Dev relinquished. So his great well-wisher had left the world. And then Yudhisthira and once went to his capital with Krishna to console his uncle and his aunt Gandhari, Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. And we'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport to that 48th verse. Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, the father and the mother of Duryodhana and his brothers, were the elder uncle and aunt of Maharaj Yudhisthira. After the battle of Kurukshetra, the celebrated couple, having lost all their sons and grandsons, were under the care of Maharaj Yudhisthira. They were passing their days in great agony over such a heavy loss of life and were practically living the life of ascetics. The death news of Bhishma Dev, uncle of Dhritarashtra, was another great shock for the king and the queen, and therefore they required solace for Maharaj Yudhisthira. Maharaj Yudhisthira was conscious of his duty, and he at once hurried to the spot with Lord Krishna and satisfied the bereaved Dhritarashtra with kind words from both himself and the Lord also. That is very important, and it will become relevant when we get to chapter 13, where Dhritarashtra will leave home after being taken care of for years and years by Maharaj Yudhisthira. Okay, thank you very much, Hare Krishna. You've been very patient and listening quite attentively. There's something nice I could read from Prabhupada that describe this pastime, or the what happened prior to what caused Bhishma Dev to fight so fearlessly that Krishna had to break his promise to not participate. But before I do that, because I still do want to end the class on time, I should ask if there's any questions, any pressing questions. Yes. 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 They were in Hastinapur, then they went to Kurukshetra, and then they came back to Hastinapur. They were in Hastinapur because they were just about, that was in chapter 8, because Krishna was just going to leave. Yeah. Yeah, they were going, Krishna was, it does say that because he was going, maybe, it seems to, let's see. Huh? In chapter 8? It's hard to believe that Kunti, what was Uttara doing there? And, yeah. They brought their whole families. Yeah. Huh? Huh? That was at the end of chapter 7 for sure. But then you...
Yeah, the Ganyu 7.
Huh?
Text 45.
In chapter 8, text 45, yes. Gaja Savayam, the palace of Hastinapur. Pravishya clearly means entered. So that, yeah, but it's tricky. It's an interesting point, though, because right at... But, you know, it seems like after Draupadi, if we look at the beginning of chapter 8, the children had been killed, and he had been driven from camp, and then they performed the proper rituals. So they went to the Ganges. So the Ganges, which usually means the Yamuna, it's not in Kurukshetra. So they were by the Ganges, and Dhritarashtra and Gandhari were there too. Right? So that means Hastinapur, because clearly... No. Clearly then, yes? Any other... Was that... Okay, that was the comment. Okay. What question? I'm just finishing. Okay. Yes. Okay, what chapter?
Chapter 9.
Text what?
28.
28, okay. Wait, just 1 second. Adi, could you ask the person to stop banging for the moment? This is the sound of the Gurukula building. Yes, I'm sorry, 28. Yes.
It says that besides that, they have been different planets in a different universe.
Yes.
And then the description of the narrations is sometimes measured by 3 times.
By time, the third dimension is time. So we've heard Prabhupada, we've heard, maybe it means, let me just read it again to make sure, but I've heard Prabhupada say that they're not in chronological order often, the Puranic literature, so maybe that's what Prabhupada means. Beside that they happen on different planets in different universes, and thus the descriptions of the narration is sometimes measured by 3 dimensions. Whoops, that doesn't answer what you said. I'm not sure what Prabhupada means. Huh? Thus the description is sometimes measured by 3 dimensions. I don't know. Maybe if someone has their their computer going, they can look in the Veda base in the original. Look, if 28, chapter 9, towards the end of the purport. Look in the old version and see if it says something that's easier to understand. What? I'm sorry, I'm not able to hear you. Yes. Wow. Sounds good. Yes, but at this point we can only suspect. That's the problem. See, because what confused me was three dimensions is height, width, and depth. Yes? Yeah, that's the, so time is the fourth dimension. So that's my theory got immediately destroyed, exploded. Did you find something? Same. So it's not clear exactly. But I have heard Prabhupada say many times that the narrations in the Puranas were not limited, they're not necessarily in chronological order, and they take place at different times in different universes. So I would suspect that's something very simple like that is what Prabhupada actually is referring to. Yes. As opposed to four dimensions. Oh, that's really good. Yes. Because the chronology, the time element, which is the fourth dimension, isn't taken into account with the Puranas, it's measured by the three dimensions. Yeah, after a great answer like that, you could ask 10 questions. Long as they're easy. Yes. Of the purport, of purpose. Wait, in 43? But it's only one paragraph. Okay. Yes. Okay. That Krishna, I thought of this one. I had that question, but I was able to answer it, at least to my satisfaction. That Krishna contains all the incarnations, and he also contains within him the Paramatma feature, and the Brahman, which is his effulgence. So it means basically that Krishna is both Paramatma, that Krishna is both Brahma Jyoti and localized Paramatma, means he contains that in him. But in Brahma Jyoti or Paramatma, there is no Krishna. So it's like Krishna contains Krishna is like $1 billion. So the billion contains $10 and $5, but the $10 and $5 doesn't contain the billion. That's what it basically means. It's sort of simple, but expressed in. He personally is not there. In the Brahma Jyoti, he personally is not there. That was my conclusion of what it meant. It's not written in a very clear way, but that's what it means, because what else would it mean? In his impersonal feature, in the Brahman feature, he means he, Krishna, refers to Krishna, is not there. And contrary to that, in Krishna, the Brahma Jyoti and Paramatma is there, because Krishna contains all that. So if you take that he, it's an unclear pronoun reference, that's the problem. So, but once you understand, if you accept that he means Krishna, the person, then it's pretty straightforward. Yes. By the way, you won't be able to do this very well in the second canto, because the second canto Prabhupada specifically told the devotees not to edit it very much. Jayadvaita Maharaj told me that because if the devotees tried to make sense of the creation, the sense that they came up with would be so far from the reality. Of what it is. In other words, it would bring it further, especially if they were young devotees then. So it's more difficult to get really what is exactly what this means. Although we can try, but it's I'm not going to be able to do very well with it probably. It's a warning about the second canto. What to speak of the fifth canto. Yes. What number, please?
41.
Okay, 41. Yes. 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 No. But there was maybe... No, it was clearly performed before because so many of the persons who were there were killed later. Where does the Prabhupada say that? After? Aswamedha sacrifice he performed three of. Yes? Yeah. Who did you ask? Yes. There are printing mistakes in the Bhagavatam. Where does it mention that Bhishma Dev was? Yes. This is 39?
Yes.
Is there one paragraph or more? No, two. Okay. Because I have these post-its on everything and it's hard for me to read. So. Were they all. Everyone on the battlefield was a demon or an atheist, you're saying? And what was their qualification for such demons and atheists becoming on the battlefield and being so fortunate to be killed in the presence of Krishna? Is that what you're asking? So it's two parts. The first seems to be, were they all demons and atheists? Yes? I'm not convinced that they all were. Some of them, like Bhishma Dev, for instance, were fighting because it was their duty. The Kshatriyas were very different from... their spirit is hard to understand for us. Just like if there's a big sports event, people get excited and they come from all over the world. So when there was a battle, these people loved to fight. And they were fearless in fighting and did not fear death even. So some of them, even though they were on the other side, they weren't atheists or demon, they were just on the other side by the arrangement of politics and time and ultimately Krishna's arrangement. But there was certainly an overburdening of the earth of demoniac forces and soldiers because that's what Bhumi was complaining about to Brahma. So that's the first part. I'm not 100% sure that everyone was, by definition, everyone who died was like Dronacharya, for instance. He wasn't a demon or an atheist. But certainly there were many. So that's one thing. And what was their qualification, the ones who were demons and atheists, to have such a fortunate end? So perhaps the easiest way to answer that is Krishna was merciful. But I can't say any more than that, really. You have an answer? Oh, it's too late for more questions. And I didn't answer any of the Matajistan, so that's because I spoke so much. I like this section so much. But ever onward. So tomorrow we'll begin chapter 10, also a very exciting chapter. If Krishna allows, we shall go through it in one day. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jay, Srila Prabhupada ki jay, Bhishma Devi ki jay, Krishna ki jay, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jay.